This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature and featuring audio versions of many New York Times bestsellers. For listeners of this podcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook to give you a chance to try out their service. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/sword. That's audiblepodcast.com/sword.
Is part of the Frog Pants Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.
Welcome to the Sword and Laser, episode number 126. I'm Veronica Belmont.
And I'm Tom Merritt.
And this is the show where we talk about the latest in science fiction and fantasy news, discuss what you guys are talking about over on the Goodreads forum, and discuss the books of the month.
Yay. Now, we mentioned that we have the videos reposting now in a separate feed, which you can find the link at swordandlaser.com. There should have been one last Friday, but for some reason that one didn't make it on the hard drive that I got of all the old episodes.
Okay.
So I just got the email from John at Pixel Core like 10 minutes ago. And he put the video up there. So I'll try to get that one up this week and then we'll be back on schedule.
Okay. All right. So now we have the video podcast, which is up in iTunes. You can find it by searching for Sword and Laser. It's called Sword and Laser Video. We have the audio podcast, of course, which you are listening to right now. And we have a YouTube channel at youtube.com/swordandlaser where we're going to be posting the videos, new videos, stuff that we do at conventions, Google Hangouts that we do with authors, all sorts of cool stuff like that, which I think, are we going to put those videos also in the YouTube feed? In the iTunes feed?
I'm not going to put the rewind, as I'm calling the old episodes, in YouTube because they already exist on YouTube at Geek and Sundry.
I meant the other way around. Are we going to put the Google Hangout videos in the iTunes feed?
Oh, in the video. Yeah, we should. We should do that.
I think we're going to do that because I said old and new episodes
gotcha.
In the description.
Gotcha. Yeah, totally.
Okay, cool. Well,
and I'll call the old ones rewind so that it'll be easy to look at the title and go, oh, okay, that's one from the past.
This is all a little inside baseball. Sorry, everyone listening, but it will help you too if you want to find the stuff that you've missed in the past or stuff to look forward to in the future.
Watching our sausage made is a lot less disgusting than watching actual sausage get made.
Actual sausage getting made. Sausage. So usually we kick off the show with a segment called What Are We Drinking? But we are recording this at 1 o'clock on a Tuesday.
So. Now I know a lot of you are saying the sun's over the yardarm somewhere. Why should that make any difference?
But it does. I am at least drinking water today.
I'm having water. I'm sorry. It's just one of those kind of days.
I heard a funny noise and my dog is having puppy dreams.
Oh, really? I love it when dogs dream.
She's going, woo,
woo. You can see they're like barking and running and doing dog things, except in their sleep.
They always look way more fun than my dreams. Way more fun.
That's true.
But anyway, let's jump into the quick burns.
Yes, because George R. R. Martin is, I'm not going to say he's working on the novel, but he is buying a movie theater.
Yes, it has been revealed that George R. R. Martin has bought the Jean Cocteau Cinema in Santa Fe, New Mexico, which is, he doesn't live in Santa Fe, doesn't he? He lives in New Mexico, but maybe he does live in Santa Fe.
I thought he lived near Santa Fe.
He lives near Santa Fe.
Like Taos or something.
So that's awesome. Apparently the theater, according to Adam over at the Word Zone, was closed in 2006. And George Martin was a big fan, and so he decided that maybe it was time to buy the theater. And who knows what he's going to actually do with it.
He's going to show constant reruns of Game of Thrones.
Just the HBO series over
on the big
and over
screen.
Again.
Yeah.
Okay, so the best part is the name of the company that he bought the property under. Did you see this, Tom?
No. What did I miss that? What's
the
up with that?
The name of the company is Faceless Man. you know, like.
Oh, yes, yes, cool? yes. Yeah. So you can ask them to play a movie three times. you give the man a name. He will play the movie.
Right. So George R. Martin says, I will not be doing it for myself, of course. So please, readers, fans, don't get nuts. I am a novelist and a screenwriter, not a theater manager. It won't be me standing at the concession stand asking if you want butter on your popcorn.
Every time he does anything, he has to make a disclaimer now.
I know.
This is not distracting me from my book, okay? He lives in Albuquerque, by the way.
That's what I thought. Okay. And he goes on to say, my job remains the same as before, editing anthologies, creating and producing television, and writing the occasional script, and first, foremost, always completing A Song of Ice and Fire. This does not change that, so stop freaking out at me. He didn't actually say that part,
but he meant it.
It was inferred.
Yeah, definitely. China Mieville is writing comics in the new and 52 DC series. It's a reboot of Dial H for Hero that's simply called Dial H, and China Mieville is the writer.
Yes, and he is, of course, a very imaginative writer in his own right. So in this episode, in Dial H, the hero is a morbidly obese ex-boxer in a ruined crime town who discovers his dial attached to the town's last working payphone. By dialing it, he becomes a series of ever-weirder heroes, from Boy Chimney, a Dickensian goblin with a top hat that stretches to infinity, who can strangle his opponents on thick, choking smoke, to Control-Alt-Delete, a CRT-headed underwear pervert who can reset reality to default.
Did you see the picture of Cocked Hoop? It's a rooster, but his body is a hula hoop.
Oh, there he is. Okay. What the frack? He is a weird dude, and I think this is going to be pretty amazing. I love that so many great, like, sci-fi fantasy authors are getting into the graphic novel space, like Joe Abercrombie, for example. I think it's a really cool way to kind of flex their creative muscles in a different way, outside of the regular, typical novel we would expect. These are a little bit shorter. There's a little more creativity involved because you have the imagery as well. Not more creativity, just a different expression of it.
Charlie Jane Anders over at IO9 lets us know that the petition, or lets us, the internet, not us personally. Although I'm a big fan, says the petition to get Isaac Asimov a commemorative plaque at his 1940s home has reached over 2,000 signatures, and you could add yours to it. There's a link to it in her story. It's a change.org petition to create a plaque.
I think that's a great idea.
Yeah. Love it. Absolutely.
And I added this link. It's a blog post from adamcalloway.net, who's writing, it's an op-ed, writing about removing the violence from fantasy. Someone shared this with me, I think, on Twitter. And he says, right now I'm working on an idea for a secondary world urban fantasy about a young man who enters a very opulent city looking to become a master chef. And then he kind of goes on, as he's been outlining and drafting this novel, that he realized he was writing a novel without any violence in it, any over-the-top, you know, outside of a fist fight or two, he says. There's no violence in it. And then it got him thinking about some of his favorite novels and how they all have a pretty violent aspect to them. The Liza Lachlamara, the Gone Away World, and of course, you know, Joe Abercrombie, things of that nature. And so he's wondering, is it possible for people to write fantasy without the violence? Is that something is that a trend that could start? You know, is there something where you can write a fantasy novel about a chef and the whole thing takes place in the kitchen and learning how to become a master chef as opposed to fighting his way to the top? Why is violence always such a key factor in fantasy fiction?
It's a really good question, and I like the way he sets it up. He's like, I don't have a problem with violence in the media. He does have a problem with more realistic violence. But I think he's posing an interesting question, and I don't think the answer is, and therefore we shouldn't have violence, but it makes us understand why it is important to a story, whether it's necessary for a story and what its effect are, in a much more responsible way of discussing it. And I do think that it's just a symptom of the motivations that make us human are the motivations we tend to respond to in fiction.
But
and always in science fiction and fantasy, they are extended beyond our current experience. So you're going to have violence because there is violence, but you're going to have more violence, and you're going to have, you know, sexual situations, and you're going to have like fantastic, awesome situations and joy that is beyond the joy that you experience. So I think we focus on the violence a lot because that's the part we wish we had less of in the actual world. Mm-hmm. And maybe some of us are like, well, if I have enough of this already in the actual world, why do I want to see it in a book?
But then I kind of think in science fiction, maybe we see less of it than in fantasy. And is it because when we're looking forward to the future, we can see more of a utopian society kind of thing?
Certainly in some science fiction, that's true. Gene Roddenberry put that down as a platitude, like humans do not fight each other. If there is violence, it's not humans. We have moved past that, writers, and you have to deal with that. And that was always a struggle, mm-hmm. but it caused them to come up with more inventive stories, probably some stories that we would never have written. So it's an interesting challenge for him to try to write fantasy without violence in it. I don't think all science fiction is free of violence,
though. No, I was not at all saying that.
I'm just stopping that email from getting written.
But even something like, for example, Harry Potter is a fantasy book, and there's a lot of violence in it. There's a lot of death. There's a lot of heartache. And I mean, I'm sure our audience can come up with I'm sure someone out there can come up with a fantasy book where there isn't some kind of war or some kind of violent effect to it. But I'm having a hard time just off the top of my head coming up with one.
Well, do you have an example of a sci-fi book that doesn't have violence in it? Because Star Trek even has violence in it. It's just not the humans aren't allowed to be the perpetrators of it, which is hilarious because Kirk always gets in a fist fight, but whatever.
Yeah, I guess you're right. I guess I don't off the top of my head.
I think it's just because we want it to appear realistic, and violence is unfortunately part of the human experience.
Well, maybe we should start a thread about it in Goodreads because I think this would be a
great Goodreads topic. Absolutely. Let's finish up our quick burns with another IO9 story. This one about The Last Bookshop. It's a 20-minute short film about a not too distant future in which books are a distant memory. Even e-readers have fallen out of vogue. But a young boy's noisy entertainment system fails. He discovers a quiet haven for stories and the man who loves them.
Oh, that sounds very nice. Though I haven't watched it yet, so maybe there's some kind of horrific twist.
I don't know. I haven't watched it yet either. I definitely want to get, when I get 20 minutes that I can spare, I want to take a look at it because it looks like a love letter to books, frankly.
Oh, that's awesome. All right, well, let's move on to the calendar. There's a lot of stuff coming up on April 30th, which is today. That is today. Yes, we will have an audio podcast. Will have. Past, future,
we'll
present.
We'll
be having it. We also have Ghost Spin by Chris Moriarty, Bronze Gods, an Apparatus Infernum novel by A.A. Aguirre. Necessary Evil by Ian Tregellis.
Yes! So excited about this coming
out. Totally. Nosferatu by Joe Hill, Deep Space Star Carrier, Book 4 by Ian Douglas, The Lives of Dao by Wesley Chu.
John Scalzi highlighted that on his blog.
Oh, nice. Awesome. And Judgment of Proteus, Quadrail by Timothy Zahn, also a friend of the show.
May 1st, I know there's some David Wingrove fans out there. The Middle Kingdom, a Chung Kuo book, is out May 1st. And then May 7th, we'll have in the audio feed, as well as a video version, a Sword and Laser audio interview with Adam Christopher. Mm-hmm. We did a Google Hangout with him.
Yeah, so that video will actually be up later today, probably. So you can look for it there, too.
May 7th is also The Fifth Wave by Rick Yancey, Into the Void, Star Wars novel by Tim Lebon, The Lost Fleet Beyond the Frontier Guardian by Jack Campbell, Zero Point, The Owner by Neil Asher, Gods and Monsters, Unclean Spirits by Chuck Wendig, Dead Ever After by Charlene Harris, Alien in the House, Catherine Kitty Cat novel by Gina Koch, The Daedalus Incident by Michael J. Martinez, Shadows of Falling Knife, a novel of the Shadowspawn by S.M. Sterling, House of Steel, The Honorverse Companion, it's a reference novel, a reference work by David Weber, and Shield of Sea and Space, The Chaos Knight Book 3 by Aaron Hoffman.
And then on the 14th, do you want me to read these or should we...
Well, we will have another audio podcast on the 14th, but I think you've got to read those first two because those are actually all three of them.
Okay, why not? We've got The Human Division, The Complete Hardcover by John Scalzi. Yay! The Tyrant's Law, The Dagger and the Coin by Daniel Abraham. Yay! And Magician's End, Book 3 of the Chaos War Saga by Raymond E. Feist.
Yay. Except I misspelled it in the calendar.
But I got it. I caught it.
I know. I was glad you didn't say pheasant like I
wrote. Raymond E. Pheasant. Like, who is that?
That's what I'm having for dinner.
Delicious pheasant.
You see?
Delicious. Pheasant. The most delicious of all pheasants. Raymond E. All right, let's take a moment to thank one of our sponsors. This podcast is brought to you by audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature and featuring audio versions of many of the New York Times bestsellers. So we should let you know that Wool, our book for May by Hugh Howie, is available on audible.com and also available on WhisperSync.
Necessary Evil, also available on audible.com too.
That's probably what I'll be listening to next, because I already finished Wool.
Oh, really? I waited. I decided I'm not going to start it until May 1st this time. Because I don't have to. And then I have to do it for an advanced shoot.
That's true. I just started reading it and I couldn't stop.
I've been reading The Great North Road, which is really good.
Oh, nice. Okay, but anyway, if you want that free audiobook, you can go to audiblepodcast.com/sword. That is audiblepodcast.com/sword. And there are, like I said, hundreds of thousands.
I'm reading The Great North Road on Audible. You can get Necessary Evil by Ian Tregellis on Audible. You can get Wool on Audible. That's how I'm going to read it. So if you haven't signed up, what are you waiting for? Audiblepodcast.com/sword. Huzzah. We'll wait for you. Go do it.
Let them know that you have found them through our show on Twitter. That is always nice to see.
Yes, it is. Absolutely.
All right. So I think it's time for a book check-in. As we mentioned, we are going to, for May, read Wool by Hugh Howie. But right now we are wrapping up Dragonflight by Anne McCaffrey. Of course, you could have read all three books in the Dragon Riders of Pern series. I believe you got the whole thing if you got the paper edition of the book.
The ebook was only available with all three. Right. With the paper, you could go either way.
Okay. Yeah, you could find a lovely, there's tons of paperback versions of this book all over the place. But yeah, we are done, and it was a surprisingly hot button book. I did not expect it to be such a hot button book.
I don't think we should be surprised anymore. This is kind of like every book we pick, mm-hmm. with a few exceptions, end up being a hot button book for one reason or another.
Well, I guess that's good. That's the point of having a book club. So
yeah,
we can
exactly
discuss these kinds of issues. So it's been pretty interesting. I read this and I don't think I enjoyed it as much as I did on my first read through.
Really? Now, do you think that's because you're at a different place in your life?
I think so. I think, you know, it really felt like a young adult book to me.
That would explain a lot of people's reaction to it, because if you're thinking about it as a young adult book, some of these situations are real creepy.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're thinking about it as, well, this is kind of trying to advance from a world that had, you know, written in a time, and we've talked about this before, in which interpersonal relationships were at a place kind of similar to this in many respects.
Okay, well, yeah, let's talk about that a bit, because that is one of the big points that I think a lot of people made in the story. Oh man, I'm bummed. I highlighted a bunch of stuff on this thread and the highlights didn't stick.
Oh.
Wah.
Plug in.
Anyway, stupid Chrome plugin. But this first discussion, started by Daniel over on Goodreads, it's called Female Characters in Pern. Now, of course, all of this discussion is going to be spoilery. So if you haven't finished the book yet, you should if you're listening to the show. But don't listen anymore if you haven't finished yet. So Daniel says, did anyone else find the relationship between the two main characters incredibly creepy? I mean, at one point, the lead dragon guy, I love that he calls him the lead dragon guy, literally used the word R word, that would be rape, I believe, to describe their sex life. It immediately colored the rest of my view of the book in a very negative way. It seems like most of the female characters presented, there's really only one that's developed at all and are not presented in a positive light. Tom, it sounded like you wanted to say something.
Well, I will be interested how people will view that particular part of this in the future. I think right now, especially with events in India, with events on college campuses over the past decade and more, that you cannot use the word rape and not have people get offended. I'm sure people are offended just a little bit hearing me say the word, mm-hmm. right? It is an especially sensitive word at this point in our history. I don't think it carried all that baggage when she wrote this book. Mm-hmm. And I'm not trying to say that it shouldn't have either. I'm just saying it was not that kind of word. And I think in sometime in the future, it will no longer have the intensity behind it that it has now. But it's the kind of thing where our society is working through the issue of that right now. And I'm trying to think of a good example of how this has happened in the past, where a certain behavior is unacceptable. And at the time where humanity finally starts to deal with it and put their foot down and say no more, that talking about it becomes almost impolite. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But then we move on, you know, and the best I can come up with is, you know, talking about someone being Italian in the United States at a certain point in our history was considered to be almost racist. And we've moved beyond that, right? It's not that big of a deal. You can say someone's Italian and no one goes, oh, so what are you, some kind of, what are you trying to say about it, right? It's like, no, he's just Italian. It doesn't carry baggage with it like it might have in the 1800s.
Well,
so
that's the thing. I mean, it was a book written at a point in time. And yes, it was the 60s. And so a lot of people on the forums think that maybe Anne McCaffrey should have been a little more enlightened or should have been writing from a more enlightened point of view. Michelle in the forum says, if an author creates a society like this one, based on our own medieval/renaissance age, low tech and so forth, shouldn't the characters behave in ways natural or authentic to the world building? Shouldn't the upper classes be dismissing of the serfs? Shouldn't the women be overlooked and talked down to or whatever? If that's the social order of the world created, then that's how it is. So what do you think about from that perspective? I mean, that's kind of the way that I look at this kind of thing. Not only is it a book of an era, it's also a book that is taking place in its own time period where this is happening. It's part of the fiction. And should we judge it from a modern point of view?
I think it's fair to judge it from a modern point of view. I don't think it's fair to judge Anne McCaffrey from a modern point of view, if that makes any sense. I think it's perfectly fair for you to say, I don't like this story. I don't like what it says. I don't like what it teaches. If that's your opinion, and I'm not saying that's mine, but if that's your opinion, that's totally fair. And you have basis for that. I think it's different to say, if I had been Anne McCaffrey at that time, I wouldn't have written this. Maybe you wouldn't. Maybe you would have. But there's an entirely different thought process going on in someone's brain. And I know there's things we're saying probably right now on this podcast that are going to sound horribly outdated and simplistic 100 years from now.
Mm-hmm. And then Rick goes on to say, then people start talking about, well, why should Levy... goes on to say, yes, a created culture should feel authentic in regards to technical and societal levels of progress. But since we are talking about a work of fiction written by an author of a more enlightened age, in quotes, and a genre that prides itself on forward thinking, problems created by the social norms of the fictional world need to be addressed in the text. Now, I don't know. I don't know if fantasy would be considered a more enlightened genre.
That's a good point. I mean, and here's where it becomes an issue is if you are a writer intentionally portraying something that you find abhorrent because you think in this fantasy world, this is the way it exists, then I think that point is well made. I'm not convinced that that's what was going on, but maybe it was. Maybe, you know, maybe Anne McCaffrey was saying, in this throwback society where things have regressed technologically, things have also regressed sociologically. Mm-hmm.
So, and then there's the whole discussion of people are now arguing about whether or not Lessa was raped. So there's a lot of, it gets a little bit sticky in the forums for sure. And I don't know, should I even ask the question? Like, do you think Lessa was raped?
I don't, but I think it's a fair discussion to have, and maybe I'm wrong. Mm-hmm. It's not the way that I read it, but then when I went and I saw that thread that you're discussing, I started to go, from that perspective, maybe. And again, I think that has to do with this particular point in time and the baggage and intensity around that issue.
Well, it reminds me of the discussion we had during when we read Ox, number 10 Ox.
Yes.
With the,
right.
What was that character's name? Ox had sex with a character, and
right.
a lot of people were confused because, well, not confused, but were discussing whether or not she was a consenting partner in that fornication.
That was a lot easier to deal with because it was less fantastical. Here you've got dragons involved.
What is that? They weren't involved in the
sex. But there's a mind link.
In the sex, you're right.
They are. It's
I was about to make that a joke, and then I realized it was true.
No, it's that's what muddies the issue is like, well, you're essentially what they're saying is when the dragons that you're paired with have sex, you kind of can't help but go have sex. Mm-hmm. And if that's but at the same point, that's also a common problem with rape discussions where they're like, well, they couldn't help it. And that's not a defense in the real world. Mm-hmm. And so you start to go, well, wait a minute. Should these dragons really be like that? But that's the world that was created. So I don't know. Gets tricky.
And then also people are saying, well, Flar felt really bad about it afterwards. He understood that that she was losing her virginity and he wasn't like stoked on it, that he had wished her first sexual experience had not been violent. But then that also moves into a modern discussion.
Exactly,
like if they feel bad about it afterwards, does it count?
Right. And then I think that's what clouds the issue is people going, well, you know, they shouldn't be able to get away with saying that. And it's like, well, it's a fictional world. And again, you can be upset with the author for creating the world that way, but within the confines of that world, I don't know. Yeah. It's all about meta meanings and what you're going to take away from it and whether it can be used as justification, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, it's a huge discussion that is still ongoing. So if you want to contribute or read up on what everyone has been saying, head over to Goodreads and join in. So another discussion that was popping up was the use of the dragons. This was started by Paulo. And he says, okay, I'm almost done with the book, but it's surely lacking in several aspects. Since I don't want to be too grumpy, I picked just one of the issues. Character motivations versus my sense of disbelief. So, Lord Holders see dragons as a burden. Parasites that exist just to eat their food. For about 400 years, it has been so. Can't anyone think of a single use for dragons on the at least 200 years between attacks?
Dragons. I feel like that's a misunderstanding because it's not the dragons that eat the food. It's the dragon riders. Mm-hmm. I mean, the dragons eat food too, but
the
dragon riders are basically saying we need to be on the ready to fight Thread at any given moment.
Right. But he goes on to say, dragons are the fastest way of transportation around. They can bring people and goods back and forth much faster than anything else on this planet. And being able to, minor spoiler, travel through time as well. They would be able to get doctors to patients even after they had died. Yet somehow no one could see uses for dragons. Overall, I see this as a book, as a good idea with poor implementation. Characters are paper thin and one needs a huge effort to see their actions and motivations as reasonable. So what do you think?
These things don't bother me, Paulo. The same reason that Major League Baseball players don't want to take part in the All-Star game is the same reason that you don't have dragons being a public transportation system.
Oh.
And it's also the same reason that we don't use military tanks to drive people around. Your defense needs to be devoted to defense because if you're using it for something else, it may not be ready or available when it's needed for defense and you don't know when it's going to be needed.
Interesting. I like that point of view. I think that makes sense.
Yeah. Now, I get what Paulo's saying. It's like, well, but come on, 400 years? Like, really? And so maybe that's less believable after that time. But mm-hmm. again, it's only one weir for 400 years. And they're worried about going extinct.
Yeah, I'm reading some of the responses from people now. And Greg did agree with you. He said, also, at what point do you expect dragon riders to decide to use their dragons as beasts of burden? A group that is set up to be set apart and view itself as special is not going to be easy to convince that they should be used for basic transport. You'd also need strong leadership to break with tradition, which they clearly did not have in the recent past.
That's another, the tradition thing is a really good point. Yeah, I hadn't thought about that.
So there's good discussion happening about that. Also, when we kicked off the book, we made some comments about it, and Dave wrote in to say, I think this was about our discussion on time travel.
Right. I was saying, why couldn't they just go back and fix some things when they travel back for others?
And he says, if you remember the main trip to get back 400 years to bring the other wares forward, they use a tapestry from Ruatha Hold. The dragons of Pern need an image in the rider's mind to travel between to that place. They also use an image to travel between times. This is why the riders don't go back in time to battle Thread when necessary. They need that image to get there. It also drains both the dragon and the rider. I don't know how far you are into the other books, but Lessa wasn't the first to time travel, chronologically speaking. Should I keep going?
Well, that's a little bit of a spoiler, okay. But it's also mentioned in the first book in the song of Moretta.
Okay, so Moretta, Dragon Lady of Pern, Moretta did some, if my memory serves me. If you hadn't read the series before, you must read Dragon's Dawn. It's the Laser Dragon Rider's book. He really loves it. If he had to rank the books, he would go Harper Hall Trilogy, Dragon's Dawn, Dragonflight, Dragon Quest, then The White Dragon. The others are really good, but those seven are my absolute favorite books. Looking forward to Sword and Laser having video shows again. Really missing them, Dave.
Yay. Well, thanks, Dave. No, those are good points. I guess what I was thinking is Lessa is able to go back in time to certain areas, and they're able to go back in time to fight Thread at least once. So wouldn't they have tried harder to figure out how to go back in time? I don't know. But he makes a good point. It's not as easy as just like going, oh, I want to go there. Boom.
And we also had a whiteboard reflection from Aaron.
Yay! Thank you, Aaron.
A brand new whiteboard. I don't want to spoil it for you guys, but you can go watch it over at swordandlaser.com. It will be in the blog post for this very podcast.
Excellent.
Excelente.
Well, that wraps up Dragonflight. I actually did finish the second book as well. I'm partway into the third now.
Oh, great.
I'm hoping to finish that really soon. But I'm going to have competition because I waited to start Wool until the beginning of the month this time, because I could. Mm-hmm. And we are kicking off Wool by Hugh Howey. Don't be confused. There's Wool Omnibus and Wool. They're most likely the same thing because Hugh Howey self-published the story in small bits. He'd used Amazon singles, those like short versions of books, to get the book out there. And once it got a following, then he put it together in the omnibus and put them all out as one story. And then that has been published as just Wool because he also has other books in the series that are now being published as well.
So it's a little confusing.
Yeah.
But we are reading.
That's why we got confused when we were originally linking to just part one. And some people were like, this is only like
30 you know, pages.
Yeah, exactly. What's going on with you? You want Wool Omnibus, but sometimes Wool Omnibus will just be called Wool. And if it's more than 40 pages, you've got the right one.
Right. So there's 8 books in the Omnibus.
Five series. There are 5 parts to the Omnibus of Wool.
Okay. That is really confusing. Okay.
Yeah, because he's written a bunch more books. Like the second book after Wool is Proper Gauge, which is the sequel. And so there's a bunch more in this universe.
Oh, wow. And so they're not necessarily chronological either.
Right.
Which is even more confusing.
Exactly. But if you're like, well, what the heck is this about? He first began the series in 2011 as a short story. It takes place on a post-apocalyptic Earth, humanity clinging to survival in silos. These are subterranean cities that extend over 100 stories beneath the surface. And initially, you're going to meet a character called Holston, who is the sheriff of Silo 18. Subsequent volumes will focus on other characters. But the silo's mystery isn't revealed until the end of book 5 with First Shift. So it is starting a series. For those of you who don't like to be drawn into a series, you might want to consider that. But remember that Wool was put out on its own with no promise of a future. So it should, most people have said you could treat it as a self-contained volume and still enjoy it.
Yeah, I felt like it worked as a standalone.
Good. You're finished?
Yes, I'm finished.
We haven't even started.
I'm finished, and I wrote a review about it on Goodreads.
Oh, my gosh.
A non-spoilery review. Oh, my God, the dog is farting. Oh, the dog is farting.
That's what you
get. Oh, the dog.
Being an overachiever.
Wow. It smells bad in my office right now. I can't even breathe.
Well, okay.
Off topic.
Before we finish kicking off, well, we should acknowledge the controversy around Hugh Howey. Now, my opinion is you separate the artist from the art, right? You can hate Frank Sinatra as a person and love his music.
You can love Ender's Game and hate Orson Scott Card.
Exactly.
Which many of us do.
We're not picking Wool because of any other reason than we heard it's a really good book. But there was a controversy, and if you've been on Goodreads, you've probably seen the threads about it, with a post that he made about a woman he met at WonderCon who he called a bad name. And people have said that was misogynistic. It's almost like we're getting back into the dragons discussion. And he has removed the post and he has apologized. He says, I feel miserable that I offended anyone. But a lot of people are like, well, you wrote it, dude. So that is out there. And we'll include a link to the Charleston City paper where it explains what he did. It has a cached version of his post and it has some quotes from him apologizing for it. We just want you to think we weren't aware of that.
Yes. And I wasn't until after I finished reading the book. So, you know, if you feel so strongly about it that you don't want to read Wool, we understand. You can always do a renegade read. I know some people are planning to do so in the forums as well. But Wool is a fantastic book, and I urge you guys to check it out. I'm a huge fan myself already.
And finally, a giveaway. So as we mentioned, there'll be an Adam Christopher interview showing up at swordandlaser.com. And Adam was nice enough to give us two books to give away.
Yes. And they're also their first edition. I believe they will also be, I'm hoping they'll be signed. Yeah, they're going to be hardcover signed. And there's only going to be 100 copies of each made. So you are going to get one or two of them.
Yeah, they're limited editions. And the Empire State one even has an alternate cover, which is apparently cool because it's an alternate universe. So maybe you're getting the alternate universe copy of the book.
Ooh, so we're going to do this. So we have a thread started in the forums, in the podcast section. And the question is, well, we're going to pick two random posters. So all you have to do is post to keep it fair. What would you do with your private robot army? This is relevant to the Age Atomic. So we want to know what you would do if you had a ton of robots just willing to do your bidding on the planet Earth or in space, maybe even, because who knows? Or in your own alternate universe. It could be anything.
It could be. Yeah. Honestly, we can't really judge you on the quality of your response. No. It has to be random. But come on, have some fun.
Have some fun with it. You know you want to. And finally, I'm going to be presenting at Writers with Drinks, which is a regular event that happens in San Francisco and also LA, I have learned.
Yes, it does.
And so there is a link to that in Goodreads and also on Facebook. It's put on by Charlie Jane Anders, of course, from IO9, and she invited me to come down. Also, Matilda Bernstein Sycamore. Thaisa Frank, I'm sorry if I'm mispronouncing your name, Seth Harwood and Janice Cook Newman will also be in attendance. I'm not really sure what I'm going to be doing yet. I'm supposed to do a reading or a talk or something. So I don't know if I'm going to write something for it or what I'm going to do, but it should be fun. And we're going to be drinking.
Jealous.
It's going to be at the Makeout Room on May 11th.
That's the name of the bar.
That is the name of the bar. It starts at 7:30 and ends around 2 hours later. Doors open at 6:30. So come on down.
Come on down.
Watch me probably make a fool of myself.
I'm going to try to go to one of the Writers with Drinks meetups here in LA sometime.
Awesome.
If I ever get the guts to leave my house, I'll let you know.
Awesome. But that's all we have for today's episode. If you want to drop us a line, the email address is feedback@swordandlaser.com. The website is swordandlaser.com. And all of our discussions happen over on Goodreads. Make sure you subscribe to the video show on iTunes or via RSS. And we'll have a lot more cool stuff coming that way very soon.
Thanks, everybody. We'll talk to you later.
Bye.